What's going on, folks? What's going on? We've got a good one, as Steve Harvey was safe. We got a good one for you, folks. I'm your man. But this is not Steve Harvey. This is Sir Charles Carey. I am excited, as always, because I love doing what I do. And there's so many different aspects and levels and, you know, extensions of being a speaker. You know, it's so much more. And I get excited every time because it's not just about what I know and what I do, but it's how I interact and how I share platforms with other people, and today is no exception. Before we get to the fact of the matter or the heart of the matter, just want to let you know about a couple of announcements. I am definitely excited because we've got an event coming up on Saturday, How to Identify and Maximize Your Message. We will definitely and have definitely been posting the feed, but feel free to click on the link, which you'll find in this group, Change the Brain, and you'll also find it on my main profile page, Sir Charles Carey, and I'd love to see each and every one of you at 11 a.m. on Saturday morning. We're going to be talking about how do you actually identify what your message is and how to maximize it, you know, how to benefit from it, all the things you can do with it, whether it's monetizing it, let other people know about it, flip it into other products and services. And this is something that you can get $0. All you need to invest is your time. Show up with the pen and the pad and you're good to go. Now to the business at hand. It's always good to see my co-host K-Fit. How you doing today?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Great. I know you was doing some traveling. Hopefully everything went well. So good to see you back safe and sound.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Hope you're well, too.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Everybody doesn't know that it's a family affair, but it's all good. It's all gravy, as we say. Now, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, if you are not ready, I highly recommend that you do get ready. I'm going to present to some and introduce to others a special team, a duo, a dynamic empowerment duo. Now, they're known as the Empowerment Duo, not the Dynamic Empowerment Duo. I just call them that because I know how dynamic they are. But I'm excited to introduce these folks to you because we have traveled across the country. We've done events all sorts of places and in almost every facet of what our industry does. So that's online, in real time, et cetera, et cetera. You know, they're an entrepreneur. You know, they write books. They have services. They do a multitude of things. And, you know, many of you don't realize that we all have struggles. We've all had challenges. I'm no different. K-Fit is no different. And our guests tonight are no different either. And we want to encourage you by sharing some of our pain. So without further ado, I want to introduce to some again and present to others the McNeils, Brian and Lisa McNeil. So let's bring them up on the platform and let them have an opportunity to, there they are. Absolutely.
Hello.
Hey.
Good to see you guys.
Man, I was listening to you introduce us. I was thinking, you know what? That's so true. And you have been supportive of our events as well. Each time
we've
been several times and you've always shown up and rocked, and we've got a chance to support your events as well. Not only other folks' events. How cool is that?
Absolutely.
It's cooler than cool. As who's it? Morris Day says, cool.
Girl, I'm so cool.
Yes, indeed. You know, it's definitely good seeing you guys, and I definitely appreciate your time. So I want to take full advantage of your time because you've given it so freely and so willingly. You know, and I talk to people all the time about being able to leverage, you know, whatever you have, but doing it with a sense of honesty, with good intention. And that's what, in a sense, life is about. You know, you leverage every opportunity. You leverage people, but you leverage them in a way that's honorable, that's fair, because one good turn deserves another. So, again, I'm glad you guys are here. My co-host is going to do a lot of the driving this evening, but we're talking about what's your come-up story. And I think that everyone has one, and it's going to be very instrumental for people to learn that, you know what? It's not always easy. Sometimes it's tough. Would you guys agree?
Absolutely.
We would agree, and this is exciting, getting an opportunity to tell this story. You know, listening to my brother Charles, I'm sitting here thinking, you know, how two things. One is how important it is to stop right now and look at what's going on and appreciating what's going on. We have a phenomenal life right now. You know, I was picking at my wife before we started the broadcast about who's earning more money between her and I.
Right.
And it's competitive in our household, too. And we love, we get to travel, we get to do things, we get to do some dynamic things, we work from home. But it's an amazing life today. My wife said yesterday, you know, out of the blue, how much she loves her life, her current life.
Yes, and I'm grateful for it, and I don't count it, I don't take it for granted. I honestly am grateful for my life right now, for the even for the challenges, because the challenges that we have now are indicative of the blessings that we're getting to experience. And so it's just very, it's tremendous. It's tremendous, but it is not without a foundation, and without, it's not without some precursors. I mean, we both had some challenges before we met and since we've been together in our entrepreneurial lives. But it's not for the weary.
Our challenges, when I think about them, have been tremendous blessings looking back on it. You know, Charles, you know, we had some, before I met my wife, I had some real dark days. And then when we got together, we had some challenges. But what those challenging times were, we had seasons, man, and young lady, where there was no money coming in. We were working our butt off, but there was no money. I mean, we had for real to be creative with our food. Okay. We had those days.
Wow.
And I found that when we have to be creative with what we're going to eat, we ate amazing meals because all we had was the beans and rice and seasonings.
But you know what? Let me tell you something. That's called like a bachelor's bill. You know, that's what we say, you know, when you don't have anyone to care for but yourself. Those are some of the best meals, man.
Yes.
Coming up with some stuff, you know? I ain't gonna lie to you. I have put together some stuff that's been like on point, but I want to get a little bit deeper into your story. So what I would like to do is ask K-Fit to start driving this vehicle, so we can get to the heart of some things and then dig into the guts of what's your come up story. So K-Fit, you ready?
Absolutely. So my first question for you guys, a lot of people follow in their parents' footsteps. They look up to their parents. On your journey, do you feel that you guys did something different from your parents, or did you follow your parents' footsteps? Were they influential on anything as far as the entrepreneurship, the marriage? Was there any lessons plans you were following, or was it your own thing, your own platform, your own dynamic duo, which got you guys where you were today because you weren't looking at your parents and the grandparents and everyone else? Tell us about that.
You go first?
No, you go first.
I'll go first. I have an adage that everyone's a minister. Everyone's a minister. And some people minister to you what not to do, and then some people minister you what to do. Now, my dad, I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, and my dad was one of only two dads in my neighborhood, my block. And he was not a faithful man. And because I watched that and I felt despicable, that was never my thing. I'm loyal. I'm completely faithful. I saw what my dad did, and my dad, he fell into the game. He got on drugs and alcohol, and that ended up taking him out. Okay. Wow. He was not entrepreneurial. He drove a cab and delivered furniture, and my mother was never entrepreneurial either. So my mentors became the books I read and the people that I identified as my heroes, but it wasn't, I didn't get it organically in my home. No.
Yeah.
Wow. I can relate. Go ahead, Lisa, yeah. Please.
For me, it was even more different because, to be quite honest, I didn't have much. I didn't have much of a family life at all. I ran away from home at 13. Prior to that, I was being raised by my great great grandmother, so my mother's mother's father's mother, who was second generation sharecropper. Her parents were sharecroppers. Their parents were slaves. So there was not entrepreneurship there. My mother was a very young mother, and
13, right?
Yeah, she was 12, actually.
She was 12.
And when I ran away from home, I was just trying to get away from abuse, molestation, a lot of things that were going on. But I started the entrepreneurial journey very, very early. For me, it was not called entrepreneurship. It was called survival. Mm-hmm. And so those, the lessons that carried me, and fortunately now my mother and I have a very good relationship. And I realized that there are lots of parallels, but K-Fit, to be quite honest, there were not, I didn't know about them until after I had already taken my journey. So I guess they were kind of organic. Or intrinsic, for lack of a better word. And then to move forward from there, again, entrepreneurship was about survival. You know, when you're 13 and you're trying to have some place to live and have something to eat, you're doing what you got to do. And so for me, it was just a matter of surviving.
You know, what I find amazing about not just your stories, but I think our generation, it was almost the same thing going on in almost every freaking household across the city, across the state, across the country.
Yeah, wow. That's hard.
Yeah, you know, I mean,
that bugs me out too, how similar stories are.
Yeah. It's like one of three scenarios. People have all gone through the same stuff. That's amazing to me. But go ahead, Kayfin. I'm sorry.
No problem. Thank you so much. I like the answers to that. So my next question is a little bit different. If you could have a superpower, what would it be?
They already got one.
I was about to say, I do have a superpower.
They're and amazing. So
do I do, yeah, we do.
Yeah.
A superpower like, I don't know. I'll tell you what my superpower would be. And I've taken steps to correct it. My superpower would be to be able to finish everything I start. Every project I start, be able to finish it.
That's the superpower you want?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like when I start a different book, I want to be able to work until it's done. Okay. Not put it down. Okay. Yes. Every project. That's what it be.
So yeah. So if I'm going to answer that from the perspective of a superpower that I don't have that I wish I had, then I would say the superpower would be to be able to totally eradicate any concerns for what other people think.
Ooh.
Now, honestly, I intentionally do that. I intentionally do that daily, but it still work. I want it to be like a natural, organic superpower. So, yes, thank you for that. I'm going to put that on my board, and I'm going to manifest it.
There we go. That's the
nice.
Thing. Since we don't have the superpowers, we have to have systems and helps with an S to manifest these things, like a team, dry erase boards, accountability partners,
absolutely,
mentors, and coaches.
Absolutely. Yes.
We need all of that to manifest these superpowers.
Nice. So my next question for you would be, at any point, did either of you feel like you missed your calling, that your passion and your strength was supposed to be something else and you followed the opposite lead? Or did you know you were always on the right calling from day one? There was never no self-doubt that it should have been writing or acting or something else?
You or me?
I can go. Okay. So I have always been operating in my calling, but never in the fullness of my calling. That's the first thing. The second part to that is your dad, Sir Charles, asked me, did I sing, right? Was I a singer? And I told him that that question was a little bit complicated, but I am embracing my yes in that. The truth of the matter is I have always been able to sing, but I was told that I could not sing when I was 12, and I believed them until I was 52. Or 53.
You're 52.
And so,
you're 53 now.
And I'm 53 now. So it was only earlier this year did I realize that the person who told me I could not sing did not have a clue or the authority, because I've been singing. So it's, again, it's going back to what other people say is none of your business. Like, that is the thing that that's the lesson that continues to resound or re-emerge.
Wow.
From a very young age, I knew that I could read well. And I knew that I could speak well. When I was in the fourth grade, I won a storytelling contest in New York City. The best fourth grade storyteller, they had this competition and I won. And I was always good in school, but I did not have someone at home to help me celebrate it.
Yes.
Okay, no one did. Okay, they didn't want to hear it. As a matter of fact, the example of singing, my Uncle Jerry was the pastor of the church I went to growing up. And we had a little singing group. He was very, very willing to let me and my sisters be involved in the church. I would strum on the electric guitar. He would let me do it. He would let me read the scriptures in church, you know, because I could read well, even when I had to stand on the box. And up until I was 12, we had a little singing group, me and my two younger sisters. We were singing in church every week. And we thought we were good because people in the church told us it was good. Until one day, I think I was 11 or 12, my mother said to me, "Y'all sound terrible up there. And Brian, you have no idea how bad you sound." And that was the end of my singing career right then.
Wow.
Okay. Until I joined the male chorus. But I was 28, 29, joined the male chorus. And I did that for 5 years. Mm. But those words spoken into us. But I always knew that I was going to be speaking. And I will say this too, K-Pitt.
Myself as well.
Once I began my career at age 23 in sales, it was like I didn't want to do anything else. Okay. I wanted to always sell and speak and do presentations.
Absolutely.
And we both are in a place right now where we can't imagine not doing the work that we're doing right now. Okay, we're not going to retire. We're going to always speak and teach and write. We're going to always learn and teach and earn and reach. We're going to always do that, you know, forever. That's how we love the work we do, because it's always been within us.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
I love it. My next question is kind of out there, but if you could complete this sentence in your own words, tell me what the end of it would be. So it would be life, liberty, and blank.
You mean?
Go ahead.
Life, liberty, and the pursuit of your purpose. The pursuit of, I answer this question. I was interviewed earlier today for another event. And one of the things they asked me, why do I do what I do? And I believe that God has uniquely gifted and qualified me to teach people how to sell themselves and their services. And I feel like I'm supposed to do it. And if I'm ever in a place where I'm not doing what I believe God has qualified me to do, I'm showing dishonor to him, and I'm not doing the mission that he told me that I'm supposed to do.
Yeah.
So I think I like owe it to God to do what I do.
Absolutely. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of purpose, the pursuit of destiny. And I actually, I appreciate the pursuit, but I like the manifestation of it all. So I will go with that.
Yeah, I can definitely relate to that, because I know that when I'm not in alignment with my God-given gifts, skills, talents, or abilities, or whatever the proper adjective is, I feel empty. I don't feel right. I feel something's missing, and it's like, that I'm not doing and using the gift that has been given to me. So I fully identify with that, yes.
Mm-hmm. And even if you go too long in between doing it, don't you get that itch? Your body don't feel right.
Something ain't right.
If it's too long between doing a talk. If I go too long without doing a talk, I'm like, ugh, what's this?
Yeah, exactly. Yep, a disservice.
Okay,
yeah.
You have a beautiful smile.
Thank you. I would like to know, do you both practice health and wellness on any platform, whether it be yoga, whether it be, you know, your mindset specifically, whether it's, you know, cardio, stretching, any type of health and wellness at all?
So absolutely health and wellness as it relates to mindset and meditation, manifestations. Physical health and wellness has been a bit of a new adventure in our home, but we are taking it a lot more seriously. We have been spending more time moving and using our physical bodies, because it definitely is well overdue.
You know, to that end, because we knew we weren't exercising as much as we should, okay? We knew we weren't. So when we moved about 3 months ago to a bigger home, and but we knew when we moved what we were going to do in the garage. So to that end, my wife always had, cars don't need houses. Okay. So she thinks garage is supposed to be for usable space.
Yeah.
So we put in our garage a treadmill and an exercise bike and a gazelle and a punching bag
and
push up bars.
And we didn't just put it in there. Let me just say that. We didn't just put it in there to catch and gather dust.
No, we
have been very intentional with using it, even to the point where I started something new and he thinks it's a little bit crazy, but instead of inviting my friends out to lunch or whatever, I invite them over to exercise. Let's do a circuit, right? So we'll spend 30 to 45 minutes doing a circuit.
Look, I was getting nervous. I heard him say it, Giselle. I said, oh, hopefully I ain't got a cheetah in there too.
No, that's a good way to exercise. Lisa likes that more than I do.
I love the gazelle more than anything. Just
yeah. Okay. Yeah. I got you. Never knew what it was like called. See. Bag, okay. Yeah.
I love it, man. I get in there and then I get in the rhythms and then boom, 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 and I just punch it out. You know.
Sure. Yeah.
So it's definitely.
I'm sneaking over one day.
Huh?
She's gonna sneak over.
I'm sneaking over one day.
Come on, we love it.
And you have fun with it too.
Yes. So we did what's called a circuit. My girlfriend, the one that came over, she actually had an app on her phone. Yeah. She had an app on her phone that does like 1 minute on, 15 seconds off. 1 minute on, 15 seconds off. So we played music. We set numbers for all of the machines. And you had to go full on, full speed on whatever machine you were on and take your 15-second break. And I'm going to tell you, she had that treadmill higher than I have ever seen it go in my life.
Wow.
And when I was my turn to get on it, the first two circuits, I turned it down to like regular people. And then she was like, you can do it. So the last time I left it, 4.5 miles, whatever how fast it was, I thought I was going to shoot off of there. But I did it. So I did it for that minute.
That's all right.
And we got to go. I like my treadmill. I like to put it on incline. Okay.
Because I incline
because I like to feel the climb and I like how my legs feel on it. You know?
No, thank you.
I do.
Not yet. I'm not ready for that yet.
Yeah, me either.
Honesty is the best policy. That's all good. My next question for you both, I feel like I know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask you anyway. Do you believe in the American dream? As in, you know, you go to college, you graduate, you get the house, the apartment, the dog, then you get married, then you retire, then you take your money out, then you go on vacation, and then you live your best life, and then you take care of the grandkids. Or have you always known there is no American dream for us?
No.
Or do you have another opinion?
Okay, I'm anti that dream right there. And whose dream is that? I know that's the dream that's been propagated and sold to us.
That dream was propaganda.
You need to go to college, okay? What happens when people go to college? They get indebtedness, okay? And I almost don't want to answer the question, but I don't think college is for everybody.
It's not.
And even the smart people I know, they go to college and they end up with a lot of debt. That debt is hanging over them into their 40s and 50s.
60s.
And 60s even. So, and even the buying the home. Buying the home can be another albatross around your neck. Okay, when you go to Disney World, when you go to Vegas, when you go to any place else, you don't buy the hotel. You rent a room, okay? You rent someplace, okay? So I'm thinking I'm not buying into that. I don't need the white picket fence. We like our home a lot, okay? But no, I'm anti that dream. I think it's a nightmare. It's a way to keep people. That whole concept, go to college, get a degree so you can get a good job, work there for 40 years. No. Those jobs are gone and never, ever coming back. The good paying job with benefits that you can stay at, that's not true. That's not real. No.
So for me, I'm not quite as passionate about that as he is, obviously.
And I would say this too. I think everybody should be full-time entrepreneurial. I got a bunch of children. Together we got children. My dream is that all of my children spend their whole life as an entrepreneur.
That's what's up.
Even though the entrepreneurial life is fraught with ups and downs, peaks and valleys can sometimes be really, really low and dark. But overall, it's a much, much better life. Okay, great.
That's what he said. So I definitely do agree that college is not for everyone. I personally had my own interaction with the education system, if you will, as it relates to what I needed in my life, right? At 13, I ran away from home, but I did not run away from school. I stayed in school. I had graduated from the 8th grade. I was excellent in the 9th grade. And then 10th grade, I was doing good. And then they gave me calculus. Now I'm living practically on the street, going from house to house, trying to pay rent, working full time. I was working full time at Burger King. I went to school from 7 to 2. I went to Burger King from 4 to midnight. I did my homework on the train, slept when I could, and got back up and did it all over again. They gave me calculus and I wanted a raise at Burger King. Wow. I wanted a raise at Burger King. And that calculus had no parallel in that. It did not seem to make any sense. And there was nothing in the school that was making sense about my situation, right? I didn't need another A. I didn't need another certificate. I needed money and stability by the time I was 16. So I quit. I quit in the 10th grade and I went to a business school. Now, some might think that that would equate to going to college, right? But the truth of the matter is that that business school gave me what I needed to earn money that moment, in that season, in that session. And for me, I think that that investment was a far better solution for my circumstances than anybody going to telling me to go to college at that time, or putting me in college at that time, or staying in high school and dealing with the challenges that I was dealing with.
She dropped out of high school in the 10th grade and enrolled in business school.
I did.
They didn't ask her how old she was, and they didn't ask her if she had a high school diploma. They accepted her into business school.
They accepted me. So I went to the business school. Shout out to Drake Business School in the Bronx, New York. I don't think it's there anymore. But anyway, I went there. I took the entrance exam, and then I passed the entrance exam. And then I went to school. When I left, when I graduated, it was a 18-month or 2-year program or whatever. I left with an associate's degree. Now that meant when I went on my job interview, fortunately for me, the first job interview that I went on did not ask me for my high school diploma. They asked what was the highest grade completed. So I was able to tell them 14th. Because that's the associate degree equivalent. And so that really worked out for me. It worked out for me much better than taking out all of these massive loans and going to school ad infinitum for things that may or may not apply to what it was that my calling was in life or my situation at that time.
I apologize if what we're saying is contrary to something that a parent is telling their child right now, but she asked us the question and we're telling our truth.
Well, you know, I honestly, I believe that, like it was said earlier, college is not for everyone. And the thing is, if you don't know yourself, you'll just follow along like lambs to the slaughter because society says this is the process that you're supposed to abide by. And I don't believe that. And I think personally, I think it's partially a scam because your first year in college, you want to take, they want you to take all these remedial classes usually. And it's like, well, even if it's not a lot, it's like, I've already done this. Why am I doing this more? Because you want to keep me in school so you can get more money out of me. And then I can finally move on because you say I'm able to move. It's just that a bunch of malarkey.
You said the word, I agree. I think if we was to redesign school, honestly, it could be done by the 8th grade, okay? Maybe 9th. The whole thing could be done, okay? Yep. The whole thing. There's no reason to have for 4 more years of school. If we do it redesigned, the things that they need for life, they could be done by the time the kid is 13 or 14, completely done.
And now the caveat, obviously, is specialties, right? Doctors, lawyers, those are some caveats for that. But I believe that there is room that is being missed now for some of the trade stuff that could definitely be what someone's life may really surmount to. They're missing that because they're not getting introduced to that.
Why don't they teach trades in schools anymore? And I think it's a scam, the first year of college. Okay, taking that stuff for what purpose?
Exactly. I know you got some more questions, K-Fib, so I don't want to jump all over it, but please proceed, please.
Well, that was going to be my follow-up school. Would you recommend trade school or college? So we don't have to go into that because I think I got your answers right there.
Okay.
So I'm going to say one more question, then you can take over. So my next question for you would be, I have a whole list. I'm sorry. I'm trying to look at you guys and look at the list at the same time. What keeps you going in life? I feel like I've heard so many things that contribute to that, but is there a main thing? Is it your story from day one, the struggle? Is it where you are now that keeps you going? Is it that you know you're inspiring people who are looking up to you? What keeps you going every day, even on a day you're so tired and exhausted?
Purpose. Knowing that someone's life depends upon you showing up. Knowing that what it is that you have to share, skills, gifts, and talents, experiences, is what keeps you going. When I am too tired to do anything, I remember that there was a time that I was looking for somebody like me. And now I am that. I can't leave my sister hanging. I can't leave my brother hanging. So it's that purpose.
I would say the same thing.
Jelly inside. I love that one.
Yeah. You know, you became the person that you needed. But, you know, I would say it this way here. I'm not self-directed. I am other-directed. It's not about how tired I am. It's not about how I'm feeling. It's about who am I helping. I really believe that every one of us as thought leaders, there are people who can only hear from Sir Charles, okay? Absolutely. I can say the same thing he says, but they can't hear me, but they can hear him. That's there are exactly. only people that can hear Lisa. And there are some people, they can't hear any other sales coach, but they can hear me. And if I don't do what I do, they won't get served at all. No one else can fill that spot. They won't get served. And their life will be diminished in some way because I didn't come through. And because I didn't put that out there. Mm-hmm. We owe it to the world.
Yeah,
I agree. I think that's important.
Yes. The concept of the sin of the desert pricks my life every day. The sin of the desert. That's when you know where the water is, but you won't tell anyone else. Or you know where the solutions are, but you keep it to yourself or not telling enough other people. The sin of the desert is the height of selfishness. If you have something that you know how to do or a way to help somebody to improve their lives in some kind of way, and you don't do it, you're committing the sin. And no matter what reason you choose, I don't know how, they might reject me, whatever, you're being selfish with your water.
Yeah. And, you know, even in our industry,
I like that.
Even in our industry, you know, as presenters, speakers, facilitators, you know, I've learned that it's kind of sad. They've had a traditional way of doing business. And even that, in my opinion, is flawed. You know, you should definitely stand strong in your fees. Got it. But there's some of the nuances that I'm saying, wow, do I really have to do it that way? Should I, you know, can I modify, you know, my approach, my ask, my willingness to give of myself or my willingness to give of my time or, you know, how much, and you hear all these different things. Oh, yeah, don't do this, don't do that. And you buy into it lock, stock, and barrel only to find out later in the quiet times. Does that really make sense? You know, so even
not only
now,
does it,
huh? Say again. No, I'm gonna say even now. I sometimes ask myself, should I redefine the way that I do business for my practice because I don't necessarily agree with a lot of things that I've been told or taught.
So to answer that, Sir Charles, I have to say the thing that we get to remember as entrepreneurs. Is that it's our business.
It's our
business. This here, my juke joint. When I transitioned to a coach and consultant and publisher,
right?
There was a lot of talk about how that should be done.
Yes.
And one of the biggest things that came along with it was that I had to leave God out of it. I had to leave my relationship with God. This is business. I can talk about business. I can talk about my story, but I had to leave my beliefs in my own private place.
Yeah.
Well, I learned very, very quickly that that wasn't going to work even if I tried.
Right.
Because it's a part of who I am. It's interwoven into my fabric.
Yes, indeed.
And so a lot of it came through. It came about that I needed to teach a certain way and I needed to talk a certain way. And I realized that sometimes when I talk, it don't matter what I'm talking about. I could be talking about dropping it like it's hot. I'm gonna sound like I'm preaching. I cannot help it because it is who I am.
Well,
and I get to, all right now. And I get to be that Because what I also realized is that there were some people, some believers, some people who had faith in the supernatural, some people that had Christian faith, some people that had faith in crystals, that felt that they were left out by all of the voices that they were hearing. And since nobody was standing up for them, they felt that they must be wrong. And so for me to pretend that I'm like somebody else is going to leave a big blank spot where I should be standing.
Yeah.
I can't stand in your shoes or in your space.
Yes, indeed.
I can only stand in mine.
That's right.
I want to piggyback on what you said as well, Sir Charles.
Yes, sir.
I think your game is worth tinkering with. Okay.
Yeah.
You get all this feedback and all that stuff, and then you put it out there and you apply some stuff. And between what you hear and learn and your mentors and your coaches talking and what life is teaching yourself, you develop a unique philosophy every time for all the people that are in your chair right now. So I think you got to always, like even me, I always consider myself green and growing and a student, and I study a lot, and I have great mentors and coaches in my life. And so does my wife, you know, because we need them. No one has enough experience in life by themselves to do it. No one has lived long enough. No one has seen enough. So you need a collection of minds all the time. But your game is worth tinkering with. You don't do your game today the way you did 5 years ago. Neither do I, neither does Lisa. Okay? You can't. Okay? Life is, we can't even sell today the way we sold 5 years ago. It's a different game altogether. So you keep tinkering with it.
Mm-hmm. And because it's yours, you get to present it the way that you want to.
Mm-hmm.
You get to present it the way that you want to and allow your audience to show you where it needs to be shaped and redefined.
Yeah. Makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. And another thing, too, when you stay in your truth, your tribe finds you.
That's a fact. That's a fact.
Absolutely. I love all of this. I'm just like this.
I'm hoping we say something. Yeah.
My next question for you would be, for both of you, what does it mean to be a man? And what does it mean to be a woman? It's now 2021. From generation to generation, we see so many changes from how children grow up, how, you know, business entrepreneurs do things. So I want to know what type of conversations you may have with your sons or your daughters, you know, because again, in 2021, it's a different time now. A lot of mothers are fearful for their sons. A lot of, you know, dads are fearful for their daughters. So what, you know, what kind of conversations do you have with your children right now in 2021 right now, as far as life, them in the job field, them as individuals finding themselves? What is that approach like for you both?
You have no idea how you're asking the right people this question, how right the people you are you're asking this question. In 2013, I founded a group called MEN, Male Empowerment Networks. And twice a month since August of 2013, I meet with men and teenage men. And I also have three sons. They're not young. My son youngest is 18. My oldest is 30 in July. So I have three boys of my own, and I've been meeting with men for 8 years now. 8 years. My wife has a woman, an organization called
Women's Empowerment Networks, and we've also been meeting for about 8 years. But I don't know that that actually equips me to answer that question.
I bet you can.
Because I honestly believe that the best way to empower a woman is to allow her to define herself. I personally believe that there are a lot of things that have tried to define us. And one of the reasons for women empowerment was to teach women economic independence through entrepreneurship, which honestly is empowering them to be whomever they desire to be.
Right.
Because when you can write your own check, you can make your own decision. And as long as somebody else is responsible for the lifestyle that you get to live or what decisions you get to make, you're truly not completely independent and you're truly not yourself. Now, as it relates to roles and responsibilities, I also believe that that's an individual decision because I am a very independent individual. I make my own money. I take care of my own stuff. But I also, because of the love that I have for my husband and the gratitude that I have for the fact that God uniquely chose him for me, specifically aligned and designed with my needs, in mind when he created him. There are certain responsibilities that I afford myself towards him. There are certain things that I must do for him. Not because I have to, not because the law said so, but because he deserves them and I desire to give them to him. And it goes vice versa.
Absolutely. I want to say this about men, okay? There's a few things. Men tend to cry in the dark. Mm-hmm. And Superman really is a myth. And men do need men because they need to find a place where they can be transparent in. Well, I think one of the most harmful questions that get told, one of the harmful statements that get told to boys is to man up or be a man. Like if they get injured in a football field or on a baseball field and someone says, coach says, get up, man, be a man about it. Don't cry. I think that has caused more harm than anything, because if they don't know clearly what that means, they guess. And most of the time we're going to guess incorrectly. Mm-hmm. I think to be a man today is doing the very best you can where you are with the help around you, with the help you can get. And you want to get as much help as possible. One of the things that frustrates men is not knowing answers, okay? And a lot of times men have been taught, since I got to be a man, I'm supposed to know how to pay this bill when I have no money. I'm supposed to know how to make sure my wife treats me with respect. Really? That's not how the game is going. I don't have to ask my woman about how to fix this. Really? Because they think that's what that means, being a man, but it's just not. Right. It's doing the very best you can with the time that you have, with all the help you can get around you. That's it. Model love consistency that way.
And looking inside is a big part of it. You know, we look, not us particular, in particular, but a lot of men today, or young men, they look at the outside world to get an idea of what it's like to be a man, whether it's their style, their dress, their speech, you know, their obviously their behavior, and they're getting all the wrong signals from fictitious entertainment to give them an idea of who they're supposed to be.
Caricatures.
That is not the man.
Exactly.
Because we're so good at hiding ourselves. Yep. We're so good at hiding ourselves, particularly from ourselves. Sorry, Charles.
No. You're absolutely right. And we do that so much that we later learn that we don't really know who we are, because we've been living this fictitious life and we have no idea what it's like to feel. And when you start feeling, it's uncomfortable because you haven't done that in so long. And now it's uncomfortable and like, oh, no. Give me a drink. You know, give me a smoke. I'll take a hit. Give me a hit. Because you don't know what it's like to feel.
You don't know what
and
it's like
to feel. They practice over and over again not being responsible. They practice it. And they get good at, when they look in the mirror, they don't see the person that needs help. Yep. They see old friend. Yeah. Okay? But you need help, bro.
Absolutely.
There's a couple of things I want to ask you guys that kind of sums up the theme for the show, What's Your Come Up Story? And I know... it's not really enough time for you to really give the full birth of, you know, your come up story, but, you know, one at a time, can you just share with us, you know, how you summarize from the dark days to when you began to see the light to where you are today? Go, please.
You or me?
Okay.
You know, the darkest time, man, I was living in a hovel, you know, and I'm going to be quick because I understand, I'm respectful to time. I ain't like where I lived, okay, and I couldn't afford it. But what happened was, I was asking questions to God, like, God, where's my money? I'm working hard. I'm not making it. It's not happening. The story could have been, what happens when smart people fail, you know?
And that's a book for you.
Yes. But I really believe the corner came for me is when I resolved, I turned the corner, and Lisa and I have never not done what we do, okay? We've been married only since 2016. We've been together in a couple since 2015. So we're still young in our game together. We've only done this together. But
since we've been together, we've always been in entrepreneurship.
Yes, but I really believe what turned the corner, sister, is the resolve. When I stood in my living room and spoke to my Heavenly Father and said, Lord, no matter what happens this time, I'm not gonna quit. I don't care if they take away my car, my home, everything but the clothes of my back. I'm going to stay in my game. On this rock, I'm going to stand. And when I said that with tears in my eyes, and I meant it, and I believe my Heavenly Father heard me say it, providence opened up. He knew that there was no amount of pain that was going to make me not do what I do. No matter what pain came, I wasn't going to quit. And providence came, and the money came, and we came up.
Wow. Powerful.
So, yeah. So I actually believe that I have had an intermittent series of downs. I want people to understand that ups and downs didn't go like this. Like, it wasn't just, oh, down and then up. There were like downs and downs and downs and up and down and down and down and up. But one of the first and most impactful,
okay,
absolutely cataclysmic and impactful moments in my life was in my journey early on. Even before entrepreneurship, you might want to consider it into coming out of this cloud and haze. Sir Charles, you were mentioning that there was that sometimes we didn't want to feel. We didn't give ourselves chance to feel, right? So I had not felt for a long time. I was using cocaine consistently to keep from feeling. And at this moment, and functioning with it, functioning, working, doing, right? And made a decision, even while using cocaine, to move to Charlotte, North Carolina, and start a new life. I'm going to start over. I'm going to make my life better. I'm going to do all of these things. Got enough cocaine for the road trip, okay? And I'm on the road. I'm on the road to this new life, to this new world that I'm imagining for myself. Coming from New York City, didn't have no family in Charlotte, North Carolina, but it's going to be brand new and nothing can stop me. I'm all the way up. I'm talking to God on this journey because let me tell you, I didn't hide the drugs from God. He knew all about it anyway. So sure, we talked while I was high. It was okay. He knew. So we kept on going. And then he suddenly said to me, "So you taking the old you on a new journey."
Wow. Wow. That's a book for you. That's the title. 2 books in 1 session. No, serious.
Why not? Yes.
That moment was like a light bulb went off in my mind. And I don't know if there's anyone who's ever used cocaine, but you don't stop using cocaine until absolutely you can't find no more cocaine. Like, you got to finish the cocaine you stop using cocaine.
That's right.
And have no other means to find any. But I'm in the middle of this, and I call it my road to Damascus experience. And I said, I don't use cocaine anymore. And I handed the cellophane and the bill to the person I was traveling with, of course, who was also using cocaine, so didn't mind that I wasn't using it anymore.
And you know this.
Okay, they didn't mind. Oh, you not? Good for you.
Right.
And that was the last time that I ever touched it and had a transition of life that still wasn't straight up, let me tell you. But it was definitely a corner turn that made an impact in not only who I was, but who I was to become. Right. And how I would look at those who came behind me.
I got to add, if you got a quick add.
Sure.
In the time that we were together, when we had times when we had our car repossessed, okay? And I had an old car when I met Lisa, but I liked it. It was an old boat. It was an Oldsmobile, a Buick Roadmaster, big old car, okay? And I liked it, but it was down a lot. It was injured a lot, sick a lot, okay? And then we had the car was dying, and then a good car, the one that Lisa had, got repoed and all those things. And what I learned, when I look back on those times where we had no money and no car and all that kind of stuff, what I learned was that my wife can handle tribulation, okay? Mm. I can handle tribulation. And what I learned was that I could trust her not to lose her head when things bad happen. And having someone around you that doesn't fall apart when things fall apart. You end up trusting each other. We learned that we could lean on each other.
See, understand that those were degrees that I earned through life. Those were not school degrees. That was cokehead degrees. That was dropout degrees.
One of the best educations.
Come on, you see what I'm saying?
We're going to get through this. So
you got through so much already. Nothing can stop me. I'm all the way up.
Ain't no stopping us now. There's levels.
Let me
this.
Tell you, Dr. Phil and Ayana ain't got nothing on y'all, okay? Forget Dr. Phil. I don't know who. They ain't got nothing on y'all. I'm signed up. I love y'all.
That's what's up.
That's nice.
Man, I tell you, you guys have spoken so much truth, facts, and I like the transparency, and I believe, I always say that when I speak, a lot of times I ask the audience, can I be transparent? And as you may know, because we've been on the same platforms many times, I have to ask it a second time because I want that unanimous yes.
Yes.
Because I need to speak my truth. I need to be able to convey these messages from whence I know they all have come from. And that's what y'all have shared. Just a morsel.
I don't ask for permission anymore. I don't ask for permission. I'm free. Permission has already been granted. And I find that the people who can't handle my transparency, they wasn't for me and I wasn't for them.
That's all good.
I ask because sometimes we have to say stuff that's not pretty
right,
to an audience. If they're not ready, say, look, I'm about to say some stuff that's just not pretty.
Look, when somebody else is cutting the check, I'll ask. But when it's my platform, I may not ask. But I do appreciate every morsel, every nuance, every insight that you've shared, because I'm hoping that, I don't know who, someone's going to grow from this. Someone's going to benefit from your message, your experience, your love, strength, and hope. And, I've come down some of those same paths. I understand. I can relate. I've been that person. So before we close out, K-Fit, do you have any other comments or any other statements you'd like to make?
You guys are awesome. I'm inspired. I would love to meet you guys. I'm going to stalk all the social media platforms for all your contacts. So it's going to be K-Fit on everything. So don't be mad at me. Thanks to meet you. I love you guys for doing the interview. I really love the transparency.
Folks, once again, we've had a dynamic evening with the McNeils, also known as the Empowerment Duo. If you haven't checked them out, check them out on Facebook. Guys, where can people hear you at what times during the course of the week?
So 9 a.m. Eastern, Monday through Friday on the Empowerment Duo page. The Empowerment Duo page will get you there every single time. You won't have to miss anything. If you do miss it, you can go ahead and tune in and catch the replay, or you can catch it on other platforms like iTunes, iHeartRadio, The Empowerment Duo, or you can go to YouTube.
Yep. Trust me, Good Morning America ain't got snizzle on them. They get
somebody
it in.
Needs to get us on Good Morning America so that they can know
right.
who we are.
The real deal, no doubt.
I'm going to store them first.
But, honestly, I really I am grateful for your time. I won't belabor the moment. As we log off, always tell people, it's always important to be open, honest, clear, and direct, because if you want to help someone, the most important thing you can do is that. Be honest with them. Be open. Help them. Give them their truth. The fact of the matter is there are people starving and hungry. And your word may be the word that feeds them, because that's what they may need at that given moment. And as always say, folks, you gotta radiate the brain and change the game. We'll see you next time.
Bye.